Hops are the female flowers of the hop plant. Hop plants are giant, impressive, and strange, and we can grow them in Iowa. This hour, we'll learn how. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Hops have a number of uses, but their most common use, of course, is in making beer. Many homebrewers also want to grow their own hops. Today, we'll learn how to grow hops from Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Diana Cochran. And Richard Giron will also join us. Richard and Diana will answer your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start off the hour by learning how to grow hops. Hops, of course, are the female flower of the hop plant and a very important component in flavoring beer. I've heard they have other uses as well, and maybe we'll get some information on that as well. Iowa State University Extension fruit specialist Diana Cochran is here today. Hello, Diana.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And hops are something that, of course, a lot of home brewers are very familiar with. They're something we really didn't see much of in Iowa until just the last few years, and there are people growing them here. Where have they been historically grown?
Pacific Northwest is where most of the hop production is currently, and you're starting to see more in the Midwest and the Northeast. Michigan has a pretty good amount of hops being grown, Wisconsin. Years ago, their hops were grown a lot here in Wisconsin. Some here in Iowa has been records. And then when irrigation and everything became available in the Pacific Northwest, that's when you saw things start moving towards the Pacific Northwest.
What kind of an environment do they need to grow well?
So they grow well here. It's just the humidity factors in for disease. But the winters don't bother them here. They just need a moist, well-drained soil. They do need supplemental irrigation in our climate. So it's more of the problems that you see is more with the disease.
Now, I've been looking at pictures of mature hop plants, and they can become incredibly tall. Did I see they can reach up to 25 feet tall?
Yes, they can. They do require high trellises, usually 15 to 20 feet in one season.
Wow. And I also saw what they can grow a foot in a day sometimes.
That's might be a little much.
All
but
right.
I mean,
people get excited.
People do get excited. you're looking at 15 to 20 feet in one season. In the season, you know, they start growing depending on what kind of climate we had that year, weather we had that year. But they typically in May start growing, if not in the middle of April, and then you're harvesting in August.
All right. And you can actually have a harvest that first year?
Yeah, you can have a harvest. It's reduced, so you're not going to have your full potential of your yield until 3 or 4 years, depending on the variety. But you can still get a yield the first year.
And how long do the plants live?
I'm not sure. I think you start seeing a decline after about 20 years is what I'm...
All right. And if they can grow up to 25 feet in the first year, do they stop at that point or do they keep on growing?
So that's when you harvest them. And the way you harvest is you cut the whole vine. So 2 feet above ground, because you train them up twine on your trellis. And so then you cut it at the base or 2 feet above the ground level. And then you're cutting it off the top wire, and then you're feeding it into a machine. So each year you cut off the whole vine.
Okay.
So it overwinters in the ground, and then it will come back the next year.
So you see a pretty impressive show every single year.
Yeah.
Now, I know that a lot of people want to actually grow these in their own backyards or their own gardens. That seems like an incredible investment of space. How practical is that?
I mean, for homeowners who are interested in growing hops, if they're hobby brewers, you can do it. A lot of people do. There's a lot of homeowners that kind of experiment. They'll kind of put where they're leaning it maybe on, you know, kind of trellising towards the top of their house. Or there's, if you look online, you see a lot of kind of creative ways people have grown them. And some is on a flagpole, and they'll just kind of string them up. Everything's to the central location on the top of the flagpole, kind of around it. So, yeah, I mean... it's kind of an investment, but I, you know, like you, it's just a fun plant to grow because it does grow so fast each year. And, you know, it's just one of those, you just kind of, you want to try to give it the space. Some of them, you know, they might be okay on a little bit smaller trellis, but.
So it's almost like planting a trumpet vine or something like that, but you're going to actually harvest something off of it.
Yes, yes.
Now, do you have to do anything to take care of it as it's growing?
Well, they like a lot of water, and then you want to make sure your soil, you've had a soil test and have the proper nutrients. They do take quite a bit of nitrogen. I mean, like any other plant, and they don't take crazy amounts more. But you usually base it off of yield. So in a homeowner, it's a little different. You know, typically what we recommend is somewhere around 75, 80 pounds of nitrogen per acre for the first year. And then after that, you start looking at your harvest, or 100, 150 pounds of nitrogen per acre per year after that. And so it's just, you know, kind of keeping up with the nutrients. And then the disease pressure, depending on what our weather has been like for the year, they can have problems with powdery mildew, downy mildew, Japanese beetle are some of the issues that people see. So it's just kind of being attentive to your vines and paying attention to them.
How do you know they're ready to harvest?
So that's kind of the tricky part. There's usually just kind of a small window for the harvest, but you start looking at the softness of the fruiting cone and kind of go from there. You're looking for the lupulin glands when they start becoming yellow, bright yellow.
And does the time that you harvest, does that affect the flavor of the hops? Do people try to time it to get a particular kind of characteristic?
Yes, they do. And that's some things that are still kind of looking at, or, you know, what is the best ways to determine the harvest. But a lot of the growers, they kind of, you know, just monitor it and decide on, you know, when based on their site.
When we're talking about growing them in the backyard or on your flagpole or wherever, I mean, how much of a harvest can you get from one hop plant?
From one hop plant, it's going to depend on your variety, but, you know, you can get from 1 acre, which you're going to have roughly, I don't know, let's say 1,000 plants, depending on your setup. You can get around 1,500 pounds of dried hops. So then you can, you know, kind of break it down from there. So I think it's around 10 pounds of wet hops, and then it's probably about 2 pounds of dry hops per plant, something like that, depending on the variety.
So after you harvest, then you also have to go through the drying process?
Yeah, so growing the hops is just one part of the process. The next is harvesting, which is very time-consuming. And then the next step is drying, and that's where you have to make sure you keep a temperature no higher than 140 degrees Fahrenheit. But yeah, they have to be dried in order to hold the quality as well and not affect it.
Now, of course, people who want to brew their own beer at home probably want to do something difficult. At least that's the impression that I get. But are there other uses for hops, or is this basically something that is getting to be more common because people are so excited about brewing at home?
I think people are excited about brewing at home, and that's where most of the reason people are growing hops. But traditionally, there have been other things used. They used to be stuffed in pillows to help people fall asleep. There's in sleep aid, they help for sleeping. Medicinal uses as well. There's look at different aspects of the hop cone and the potential for different medicines. But traditionally, most people are excited about it for brewing beer.
Right. And do you see this becoming a crop in Iowa that we're going to see fairly commonly?
I think it's a potential. I think we have the potential to grow quite a few hops. I think it just depends on you know, the grower, and each person needs to kind of take it under their own care and look at it and start kind of small, see what they can do, because it is take, you know, it's a crop that grows 15, 20 feet in a season. And if you have disease problems, then there's a lot of things that come into that and making sure you can take care of it.
Well, I can imagine if you have disease problems, I mean, this is an enormous plant. It must be very difficult to treat those problems.
Yes, it can be, especially for a homeowner, or if you don't have some of the machines or mechanical sprayers. Like, you know, at air blast sprayers, some people are using CO2 backpack sprayers with an extended nozzle so that they can reach the top of the plants.
Now, with a lot of plants, I mean, tomatoes in particular, that are prone to different diseases, the recommendation is to move them around every year. If you have hops and you have a disease problem, are you going to have the problem next year too?
Well, it depends on the disease. You know, a lot of you're trying to just kind of prevent it. So when the favorable conditions are there, then you're trying to apply some fungicides to the plant. You know, if it's something that's in the soil, well, there's an issue that it could be there. So you try to grow varieties that are resistant to certain soil-borne pathogens, as well as the other pathogens. So it just kind of depends on what you're working with.
John in Adams County has a hops-related question for us. Hi, John.
Yes, I was calling to see, is there such a thing as a wild hop? I was walking down a dirt road a few years back, and it was growing on a tree. It was kind of on a vine and smelled like a hop, looked like a hop, but I've not been able to find it since.
Okay, so are there wild hops?
Yes, so there are native hops in North America, some in the Midwest, some in the Northeast. And then there's also reports that some of them found in Iowa might be hybridized. So, for instance, on the High Trestle Trail, if you're on that trail, I've seen them growing on that. And it's speculated that, you know, when the railroad was going through, they might have fallen off and then hybridized in the areas. But there are wild hops. And some hops have been collected in Iowa and sent to the germplasm bank for the USDA hop germplasm. They have three accessions, I believe it's three, that they have in their system.
Hmm. So if you have hops, do you need to have two hops plants so that they can be fertile, or does that matter with hops?
So with hops, no. I mean, you want to have more so that you have the yield that you need, but you're looking for the female plants, and you're trying to make sure there's no male plants around, and you don't have to have a different variety.
Okay, so really only females are sold.
Yes, try to. And if you find male plants, then you're trying to pick them out of your yard.
Why?
Shucks.
Right? Yeah.
I look at these pictures of these hop fields, mature hop fields, and they're just so incredibly just impressive. And it makes me wonder if anybody is doing like hops mazes, that kind of thing. With the value-added agriculture has gotten so much more common in recent years. Do you know of anybody doing that, say, in Wisconsin or out in the Pacific Northwest?
No, I do not.
All right. Well, it's a great idea. You can use it.
Yeah, there you
it's
go.
All yours.
All right, thank you.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Diana Cochran is an Iowa State University Extension fruit specialist. As you just heard, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be joining us. And of course, you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about growing hops in Iowa with Iowa State University Extension fruit specialist Diana Cochran. Of course, you can ask her questions about hops, but about any of the other plants in your life as well. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And we do already have a lot of people with questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. People are excited about hops. We'll start with Sam in Ankeny. Hi, Sam. Sam, are you there?
I am here. I'm sorry. I dropped my phone.
What's your question?
Well, I've been growing hops in Ames off my back deck for about 12 years now. They're a great barrier plant. So we've got five different cultivars growing out there, varieties. But an entertaining story. We grew up in southwestern Colorado where Coors grew a lot of their hops back in the late 60s, early 60s. I was 6 years old, driving along with my grandfather, and I asked, what are those plants over there? And he said, why, those are what we feed frogs. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, they're hops. Frogs, hops. But the bottom line, we've done some work with Sierra Nevada Brewery out in Chico, California, looking at their hop essences and essential oils. And it'd be interesting to see if we could do a comparison of how Iowa-grown hops compare to the Pacific Northwest hops based upon the aroma component profiling.
Well, if you get that done, let us know. And so you'd say they make a great barrier plant. That's something we might need to add to our ideas for privacy in yards. What do you think, Richard?
It's a possibility. A very high fence, but
right.
but a living fence.
Yeah, and you can train it, actually. It's very trainable. You just have to be aware that it does grow 4 to 6 inches a day in some cases. I mean, we now have some that are probably close to 15 feet long.
Wow.
And that's just in a pretty short period of time here.
Right. Well, Sam, thank you so much for your call.
No problem. Good show.
Thanks a lot. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I'm starting to think this may be where Jack and his magic beanstalk came from. Jesse's on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Diana. It's good to hear your voice. You've been helping me with my plum trees in my backyard here for a few months now.
Oh, hey.
I'm that guy that keeps bugging you.
No, you're not bugging me.
Anyway, so my question is, I just got done tearing out some hops because I'm going to plant some hardy kiwi, but I'm wondering, in a commercial setup, with how invasive these can be, how are these controlled with their spreading nature? I mean, how do you keep that under control, and what are the long-term effects on the soil or maybe land values over time if... you know, you've got ground just kind of packed full of rhizomes.
Well, so, thanks, Jesse, for your question. Like you just said, the rhizomes are going to be an issue because they do, you know, will sprout up from that. And so it's just one of those things. I'm not sure as far as once you remove them. I mean, once you remove them, if you're going to till it up and then apply some herbicides to kind of kill them, it shouldn't be that much of an issue. But you could still, I guess, have that rogue hop plant come up. I know, you know, in the spring when you start training your hops, you have to make sure, you know, you train 2 to 4 binds up the twine. And so you remove the rest of the suckers that pop up. So, you know, it's just kind of removing and, I guess, paying attention. So I guess I can ask you once you start getting rid of your plants and see if you have any problems.
All right, Jesse, thanks a lot for your call.
Yep, thank you.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Emily is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Emily.
Hi, what a fun conversation.
Thanks. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas for you and then a question. So one of my good friends grew up in Oregon on a hops farm, and every holiday season what they do is they wrap their dried hops in a wreath form, and then they put greenery in it and hand them out to people in their community. So that might be a fun way to use some of those vines.
Interesting. And what's your question?
My question is, so my husband has recently started homebrewing, and we've planted some hops in our yard, and we've planted Magnum and Cascade hops, Magnum and Mount Hood. And one of them is growing, and one of them is not growing. And we're wondering what we can do to help the ones along that are not growing.
So do you know which one of those is the one not growing?
Yes. So one of the Magnums is growing and one of the Mount Hoods is growing. So there's two of each plant.
Okay.
Then there's one of each plant that's not growing.
Well, I'm not sure on specific, you know, there could be multiple reasons. But I know Mount Hood has been reported that it doesn't do as well here sometimes.
Okay.
So it could be that. You want to try to look for varieties that are resistant a disease like downy mildew or powdery mildew as much as you can. So I can't remember why some of these aren't, but some of the ones that are grown really well in the Pacific Northwest don't perform as well here.
Okay.
So it could be that, and it could be, I'm not sure, I don't want to get into where you acquired your plants from, but that could be an issue too, of depending on where they came from.
I'm sure. They came from a really renowned brewing company, so I think the source of them should be fine. But I heard the talk about the nitrogen. Maybe we need to get on that. It was just curious that, you know, they're 5 feet away from each other, and one of them is doing so well with each variety, and the other one hasn't popped up.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 foot, I mean, that's a good spacing for them.
Yeah, it could be nutrients. Have you applied anything?
We haven't. We just stuck them in the ground, a couple feet under, put some fertilizer in, and we were really impressed with how quickly two of the plants popped up, and so we're just wondering what happened to the other two.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It could be a couple of things, but try applying some nutrients and see if they're just kind of being a little bit more reluctant to come out yet.
All right, Emily, thank you so much for your call. We have, like I said, a lot of hops questions. Of course, you're welcome to join the conversation with questions about other plants in your life as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We have this interesting question about hops. Do deer like hops? We have lots of deer in rural Marion, says John. Do you know?
I'm looking at Richard, and I'm trying to get him to answer this one. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
All right. Well, maybe somebody out there knows if you've had deer eat your hops.
Yeah.
They'll eat almost anything. So
right. There's
always that thought if they're abundant, they might. So.
All right. And then we also have a question. We've talked a little bit about getting rid of hops. That's Mary's question. Yikes. I want to eradicate the volunteer hops that are taking over my garden. What can I do?
I think I would try digging them out. That'd be the first thing that I would try. If that doesn't work and a few sprouts come up, I would probably spot treat with Roundup or glyphosate, and that probably should take care of it. But you may have to come back and do it again, so be persistent if necessary.
Now, I would guess that their root systems are extensive since they're so incredibly tall.
Right.
Is that
right? So you may have to be persistent, but I think if you do that, if you're patient, persistent, that you should be able to destroy them.
All right, let's go to Joanne on the line in Illinois. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I just wanted to comment about in the early 1930s, I lived on a farm, and my mother had one planted on the east side of a screened-in porch and depended upon that every summer for shade. And I'll never forget the, I don't know if I want to call it fragrance or odor, of the hops. Vine. They definitely is distinctive. And a quick question for Richard. Is it too late to prune my standard lilacs?
I would say no. You want to get that done probably in the next week or 10 days.
All right, Joanne, thanks for your call. So is the smell of a hops plant, is it pleasant, Diana?
It's definitely got a distinct smell. And I think it just, for me, it doesn't bother me. But it's definitely a distinct smell.
All right. So something you might want to think about before you plant. Maybe go smell one before you put one in your yard. Luann is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Luann.
Hi. I have a burning bush, and it's older. And I've noticed this spring that, you know, some of the main branches in the middle are not, you know, leafed out. And I was wondering if it would be okay to trim those back.
Right. Whenever you see a dead branch in a tree or shrub, you can go out there and prune it any time of the year. So
okay.
You can do that right now.
Okay. And then I have another quick question. I bought some daffodils. You know, they were getting rid of them. They'd already bloomed at the store. And I planted them under a pine tree. Will they do well under a pine tree?
Well, probably
not. Light there.
Yeah, because basically they need at least 6 hours of sun per day. And that's important because when they're done blooming, that foliage will persist for typically 4 or 5, 6 weeks. And during that time, the foliage is manufacturing food and sending that food down to the bulb. And they have to store a certain amount of food in that bulb for them to bloom the following spring. So if they're kind of in partial shade, they may not get enough sun and not store enough food up to the point where they can bloom the next spring. If they don't get enough food, they just end up foliage.
Right. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk, post on our Facebook page. This one's a tweet from Anna. A few of my tomato plants have blight. I've spray treated once. At what point should I pull them so it doesn't spread to others?
Well, at this point, it's so early, I'm not sure it's some type of blight. If they think it is, it should affect the bottom leaves first. And typically what I would expect to see would be maybe some small spotting, small tan to brown spots. The leaves may eventually turn yellow and then eventually fall off. and this would work up gradually over the summer to the top of the plant. If they think it is, they can use a fungicide. They need to apply it thoroughly. They need to follow it, follow up on a regular basis as far as spraying the plant. But I wonder at this point if it might be environmental conditions that may be affecting the health, because when you plant tomatoes, that first week or two can be kind of rough as the plant kind of adjusts to being outside. And sometimes they don't look very healthy initially, but if they get if they're given a chance, they'll quickly outgrow that. So
okay. Here's another question. This one's from Jeff. I have knockout roses. Something is making holes in the leaves. Help me.
Okay. Well, I would check. Now, if there are actually holes all the way through the leaf, that might be like a leaf cutter bee, possibly, and they make perfectly round holes in the foliage. The other insect, which is much more common, is the rose slug. And the rose slug basically is a small little green worm, and they feed on the green tissue, but they don't actually eat holes in the foliage. They leave behind the skin, so to speak. So you can actually see some tissue there, but you can see through it. And they can be very, very common, and they can kind of defoliate a rose pretty quickly. So I would check the plant very carefully. If it's a rose slug, they can see it, and you can use an insecticide and control those.
All right, back to the phones. John is on the line next in Parkersburg. Hi, John.
Hi, Charity.
What's your question?
I have a portion of my garden that's been overtaken by sawtooth sunflowers. I'm wondering if sheet mulching would be an effective way to manage that.
Taken over by what again, please?
Sawtooth sunflowers.
Okay, sawtooth sunflowers.
Okay, and you want to destroy those?
Well, they're really thick. I tilled a few years ago, and it just kind of spread the rootstocks around, and now it's beyond what I can do unless I hand dug every single rootstock. And I was wondering if sheet mulching would kill them off, or if they just end up poking right through.
Mulching materials, I would think they would poke right through eventually. That'd be my guess.
What about sheet mulching?
Well, I'm not familiar with that material. When you say sheet mulching, it is basically what?
Well, you put down like a layer of cardboard or newspaper, and then you pile on greens and browns and manure and stuff like that. And it's supposed to put a barrier so nothing can get through and fertilize.
Okay. Well, you could, if it's not too big, possibly place something like a tarp or something. A heavy-duty tarp or some other object where they could not get through. I see that as a possibility. It might have to stay there for maybe a year or two, but something that they simply cannot penetrate might be effective. It could be an old piece of carpeting, a tarp, or something where they physically can't get through it.
Okay.
All right. Does that give you some ideas?
Yep, thanks, Terry.
Right. Yep, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Carla is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Carla.
Hi.
Hi, what are your questions?
I was wondering if you could tell me if hops are insurable as a crop.
I do not believe they are, but I would have to double-check that. I know a lot of our specialty crops, you can get different, you know, like hail damage and different coverage, but yes, that's a good question.
And how would I find out something like that?
Talk to your farm service agency.
Okay. And then my other question is, what type of mulch should be used around the bottom of hops plants?
I don't know if one's better than the other. I haven't kind of ran across any of that. Richard, do you...
So maybe it doesn't matter? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it matters. I mean,
I would think wood chips, anything that would be sufficient in a garden situation probably would work.
All right. Well, Carla, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got a number of lines open right now, so you can get your question in. Call is on next in Palo. Hi.
Well, hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
I got a bunch of oak seedlings all over the yard, and they seem to grow real nice and everything, and all at once it gets eaten off, like it gets cut right in the middle. what animal or what, who is what's happening here?
All right, who is eating your oak seedlings?
Yeah.
How big are they?
I would say about a foot tall.
Okay.
Maybe a little more.
Are you seeing the top, or are they totally
right in,
gone?
Right in the middle. There's a stem like maybe 6 inches tall standing in the bottom.
Okay. It could be a rabbit.
Okay.
It could be deer. Those are possibilities. I guess if you have some that you want to protect, I would try putting some wire fencing around them, maybe a foot or two tall. And if it's rabbits, that should prevent them from damaging those. But I would maybe try some fencing.
All right, Carl, thank you so much for your call, and good luck with that. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also post on our Facebook page. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Extension fruit specialist Diana Cochran. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension fruit specialist Diana Cochran and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, and they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got a number of questions on our Facebook page as well. Here's one from Kathy. Does wild parsnip, the stuff that causes blisters, benefit any animal, insect, or bird? I want to destroy all of it on our land, but I want to make sure there isn't some creature dependent on it before I do.
There might be some animals that might, but I think the risk far outweighs the benefit, and I'd probably try to kill them.
All right. And we don't know of any animal that is solely dependent on it.
I would think not.
We think about that relationship of monarchs with milkweed,
right.
But I haven't ever heard anything.
No.
I've heard a lot of things about wild parsnip and the pain that it can inflict.
Right.
But
it can be very painful, yes, yeah. Absolutely. So,
all right, here's another one from Facebook. Mandy asks, our plum tree fruits yearly but has a lot of bare limbs, no leaves at all. Anything special I should do to keep it healthy?
Okay. Well, I would say initially when you plant a plum tree, make sure it's a well-drained soil. They do not like wet, poorly drained sites. That's important. Plum trees are relatively short-lived. If you have any dead limbs in the tree, prune those out. Keep the area beneath the tree kind of weed-free, plant-free. I would use a mulch. There's typically no need to fertilize the tree. I would water the tree if we have a prolonged dry period, and expect the tree might survive for maybe 10 to 15 years.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Next up, we've got Stanley in West Union. Hi, Stanley.
Hi. I had was we direct seeded 7 years ago walnut, oak, maple, and ash and hickory, and we're thinning them out. And I'd like to know some of the smaller ones, can we dig them up and transplant them now? And also, as I'm trimming out what we don't need, can I prune the other trees?
Basically, as far as transplanting, it's very hard to transplant when they're in leaf. The best time to transplant is when they're basically dormant or bare. That could be in the fall after leaf drop or early in the spring. I would prefer early in the spring before they begin to leaf out. As far as pruning, you can prune most trees in midsummer. The exception would be the oak trees. We would prefer to prune those during the winter months, basically December, January, and February.
All right. And if he's got a bunch of seedlings and he wants to transplant some, he should probably flag them during the summer so he can find them in the fall or the winter, right?
Well, he should be able to find those, right. But doing it right now is very, very difficult unless you have like a tree spade.
Okay. All right, let's go next to Dale in Linn County. Hi, Dale.
Yep, love your show. My question would be for Richard, I think. Richard, as you well know, Althea shrubs are available in a variety of bloom colors, mm-hmm. and I was just wondering what your experience was in terms of which of the bloom color varieties are the most hardy. I was just wondering what your thoughts were, particularly on white or white and red.
I don't think anyway, there's much difference in the hardiness as far as flower color is concerned. As far as the Rose de Sharon, I kind of consider Highway 30 to be the dividing line. And above that point, I don't think they're reliably hardy. And I go back to two winters ago when we had that really very long, brutal winter. And even here in Ames and in Des Moines, we saw some dieback on those. So I would say it doesn't really matter as far as flower color, but north of Highway 30, they're probably not reliably hardy.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know. I've been watching some in a neighborhood area that really received little to no care, and they're kind of white red, and I think there's a pink one, and they survived those winters that you're talking about well, but okay. The blue ones in particular didn't do well at all around here, even last winter, so. I just didn't know if there was a distinct difference in hardiness.
Yeah, I don't think there really is. I don't think there is.
All right, okay. Dale. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Paul is on the line next in Delmar. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
What's the best thing to use for grubs in hostas? We're starting to get some grubs in our hosta plants.
Now, when you say grubs,
I've been told you can buy a commercial thing or just use brining salt. What is the best thing?
Okay. Now, when you say grubs, do you mean slugs by?
Yeah, slugs.
Okay, yep.
They eat holes or whatever
right.
in the leaves.
Right, they do. Now, the good news is they're not going to destroy the plants. They can cause quite a bit of damage, and aesthetically they don't look good, but they're not going to kill the plant by no means. They're not going to do that.
Okay.
You can use slug pesticides. They're available. But I would say typically by this time, it's probably too late to really achieve much control. Typically, if you use those, you have to start using those early, like in maybe late April, early May, and prevent that population increase. Once the population builds to a certain point, it's hard to control them. So I would try a slug pesticide next spring early on and apply that according to label directions, and the population will vary from year to year quite dramatically depending on the weather in the spring. If we have cool, wet weather in the spring, they'll multiply quickly. If we have a dry spring, far fewer. So,
all right, Paul, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Hillary in Windsor Heights. Hi, Hillary. Hillary, are you there? All right, well, we'll try to get Hillary on the line, go back to her next. Margaret is on the line in Washington. Hi, Margaret.
Hello there.
Hi.
I have a question about American cranberry bush. They've been in the ground 2 months. They're mm-hmm. about 2 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And I found little green worms eating the fruit that was already the fruit berry seeds that were already coming on them.
Okay. I wouldn't worry about it.
Good.
They're not going to cause serious harm to the plant. My main concern this year would be making sure they're well watered all summer if we have a dry period. And keep on doing that through summer into fall, if we're having a dry fall. And this fall, if you have rabbits, you might want to consider putting fencing around them so they don't damage the plant. And hopefully next year they'll be.
Will deer eat them?
They shouldn't find them very appealing. No, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Margaret, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Hillary is up now from Windsor Heights. Hi, Hillary.
Hillary, hi. I have a quick question for Don and also a quick one for Diana.
All right. What's your question?
For Don, my granddaughter is growing a cabbage for her third grade science project. We have it in an 18-inch pot, and some of the leaves on the bottom are turning yellow, and I figured they should probably be removed. But I wasn't sure if I should wait till they're totally dead and then pull them off, or if I should clip them off somewhere.
Well, that may
or
be. That might be a sign of a nutrient deficiency. And I guess since they're growing in a pot, I might want to feed them with a water-soluble fertilizer like Miracle-Gro. And so the next time you water, maybe add a little bit of fertilizer to that water and then feed the plants. As long as the majority of the leaf is green, I would keep it. Once the majority turns yellow, I might take it off at that point.
And would you clip it or pull it?
I'd probably very carefully kind of pull it off.
Okay.
All right, you also had a question. Yep. Go ahead.
I really am loving this whole conversation about the hops. Can you tell me how a person could get some hop seeds or hop plants just to put them up for shade and privacy? That just sounds so incredible to me.
So where do you acquire hops plants?
There's different places you can contact. So you can either get them as rhizomes, or you can buy them that are have like the crowns where they propagate them from the rhizome. And then there's also ornamental varieties that you could probably find. I'm not sure, Richard, you know if you've seen any around here in the garden centers, the ornamental?
I haven't locally, but they should be available in catalogs, internet sites.
Yeah, they are. And actually, somebody sent me a picture from somewhere. So I think there are some ornamentals available somewhere around here in some of the retail garden centers. But yes, there's different places if you look online, different places. There's places in Wisconsin, Michigan you can order from. There's places in the Pacific Northwest. There's also some of the local hop growers. They might, in the spring, will put out an ad saying they have rhizomes for sale. So that's also a possibility.
All right, Hillary, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Anthony and Marion. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, I had a question. I put some zucchini seeds in the ground, and surprisingly, only one plant came up. Usually I get a plant, or sometimes I think two plants from every seed. but is it too late to reseed? And if so, what do you recommend I put in that spot?
A zucchini shortage. Okay.
Yes, well.
Yeah, I know.
With a summer squash, you can actually plant those as late as June 20th. So you still have time. Now, the winter squash, you know it's too late for those, but if you have things like summer squash, zucchini squash, you can still plant those, but do it as soon as possible.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Anthony. 866-780-9100 is the number. Kathy's on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What's your question today?
Well, we had three ash trees removed from our front yard this spring, and so now it's very sunny and there's no shade. I wanted to know what would be the best species to replace a couple of them with.
Okay. I think I would do a tree inventory. What kind of trees do you currently have? And then I would probably plant something different.
Okay.
The trees that I would look at as a group would be the lindens.
Uh-huh.
They're a nice tree. The maples.
Okay.
And the oaks.
Okay.
Those would be the top ones.
Okay.
Then I would also consider maybe the honey locust.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the hackberry.
All right. And the hackberry. Okay. Right now we have no trees in our front yard. Because
Then I would look at the full gamut. As far as the maples, you can look at the black maples, the sugar maples, the Freeman maples like Autumn Blaze. As far as the oaks, I would look at things like the red oak and bur oak.
Okay.
The lindens, there are many cultivars on that. And then the hackberry and honey locust.
Okay. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Kathy. And diversity is the key there, right,
Absolutely,
Richard? So that
right.
never happens again.
Right. So don't plant five sugar maples. Maybe one sugar maple, one oak, one linden, that type of thing.
All right. Richard is on the line somewhere on the road today. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, I'm pulling off the road right now. I'm in a little place called Leon, Iowa, just getting ready to go in there. And my question is, I live in northeast Missouri, and I have four hydrangea plants that after we had the hard freeze a couple years ago, they did not bloom last year till very late.
Okay.
And then they didn't get a very good bloom on them. They never actually got to the, you know, to the blossoming out, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And I've been told to cut those back to try to cut them back and see, you know, they said they bloom on old wood, but I guess I'm not understanding that. Does that mean Will they bloom if I cut them back to the ground? Will they bloom next year?
Right. There are different types of hydrangeas. Some bloom on new wood, and some bloom on old wood. The big leaf hydrangea, Hydrangea macrophylla, blooms on old wood. So what happens is if you have something that blooms on old wood and it dies back in the winter, it's not going to bloom that year. It can't because you've lost all the old wood. So the macrophyllas are kind of hard to grow in the Midwest because if we have a hard winter, they may die back severely and they simply do not bloom. They don't die. They come back from the base and you have this nice green plant, but they don't bloom. So
beautiful plants.
Right.
So this year they've got like one of them has like three really big blooms and one of them's got four or five that are kind of medium, but they used to bloom really really big every year, but I don't know what has happened, and they're just ugly in the wintertime, and I just didn't know what to do.
So what I would probably do with the big leaf hydrangeas is, because they're kind of iffy as far as hardiness, is in the fall of the year, I might take some soil and kind of mound that up around the base so they have some extra winter protection, and then the following spring, let them leaf out, and then go out, and once they've leafed out, prune out any dead wood. But only dead wood. Leave the live growth. And if they survive the winter well, they'll bloom nicely. If not, probably not very well at all.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's try to get in another question here. Daryl in Cedar Falls. Hi, Daryl.
Hi. Good morning, Charity.
What's your question quickly?
I found a jack-in-the-pulpit cluster back in the fence row behind the shed. I have ephemeral garden in the front. I'm wondering when would be a good time to break in there and move that and move it up where we can see it.
Well, you want to move the plant itself? I would do so probably in late summer as the plant is kind of dying back somewhat. You can also take, if they have fruit, you can also take the fruit. Once they turn that bright orangey red in late summer, you can take those fruit and you can actually plant them in the ground and they should germinate from seed also.
All right, Daryl, thank you so much for your call. And very quickly, Mike in Iowa City. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hey, I have some strawberry plants, and glyphosate was sprayed right up next to them. And when I looked up the MSDS sheet, it said you have to wait 14 days before harvesting.
But your strawberries are ripe right now, aren't they?
Well, they're beginning to ripen, but what is the recommended 14-day period of time? Why is that?
I'm not sure, but did you actually spray the plants themselves? I mean, you might have sprayed close.
It was very close to, I don't know if drift would go over onto the plants or not.
Well, it's not very prone to drift comparison to things like 2,4-D and some of the broadleaf herbicides. So my thought is if someone or I sprayed this material and I did a very, very good job, and I didn't have any drift, I would assume the strawberries would be okay. If I thought there was some drift, I would probably say no, because there may be some of that material on the actual fruit.
And you don't want to take chances.
Right, you don't.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. We are out of time today. Richard Duran, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Diana Cochran, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Iowa State University Extension fruit specialist Diana Cochran. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.